Welcome to Lending Forward, a podcast where we're lending every bit of what we know to our listeners. From real conversations and lessons learned deep within the industry to education and forward thinking. Together, we're lending forward. And as always, don't forget to subscribe to our channels and connect with us on www.atlanticbay.com. Atlantic Bay Mortgage Group, LLC, NMLS number 72043, NMLSconsumeraccess.org is an equal opportunity lender located at 600 Lynn Haven Parkway, Suite 203, Virginia Beach, Virginia 23452. Welcome to another episode of Lending Forward. I'm your host, Taylor Ellard, and joining me is Mark Magnacca, co-founder and president of Allego, and of recent, an author of Mastering Virtual Selling, Orchestrating Sales Success. So welcome, Mark.
Taylor, glad to be here with you.
Thank you for being here. Well, we're so excited to dive in, but for those who might not know much about you, I'm certainly going to dive into the virtual selling stuff, and I know my mortgage bankers want to hear about it too, but let's kind of lead us down the road of Mark. You know, how did you get to where you are right now?
Sure, Taylor. I'd be glad to share that piece with you. What happened is I come from a cousin of mortgage banking, which is wealth management. And as you know, many people in wealth management also have a partner as a mortgage banker who's affiliated with them, because inevitably in the course of a client's lifetime, they're going to need that help. And most of us want to refer to somebody with whom we have a relationship. And so I was a financial advisor and was an active trader in the market. And what I discovered was that I was really interested in helping people learn about the financial markets. Mm-hmm. And so I was very young. I actually got my license in the securities business. It's called a Series 7 license, the general securities license, when I was 19 years old. And a little bit before your time, there was a famous TV show called Family Ties with Michael J. Fox. Mm-hmm. And this was on in the 80s when I was a kid. And so Michael J. Fox was this young business person. And he was sort of my role model from television. And so I was interested in trading in the market and all that stuff. So anyway, I start working for this investment firm after going to a place called Babson College in Massachusetts. And what I discovered was that while I looked young, and I was young, and many people in the financial services business felt, and some mortgage bankers might feel this way now, well, I'm too young. What I realized is that when it came to teaching people about financial markets, I had a superpower, because I had energy, I had enthusiasm, and I had knowledge from my own trading experience and my mistakes that made me qualify to be able to talk to people who are, in many cases, my grandparents' age. Yeah. And so long story short, that became our unique model, which was financial education. And it was really through seminars, it was lunch and learns, it was all different kinds of things. And as so often happens, we tapped into one particular part. In this case, it was the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. They were state employees who worked at hospitals. Mm-hmm. And anyway, a number of these hospitals ended up closing, and these people needed help. And they already knew me because I had been doing this financial education.
Right.
And what happened that was really remarkable is that I had one of our clients who stood up in a meeting. I finished the presentation, Taylor, and I said, on the table in front of you is a blue card. And if you'd like to learn more about how we can help you with your particular situation, please fill out the card. And I'll be standing over there at the door and you can hand me the card. If you want to meet, we'll follow up with you. And if you don't, you know, no problem, and enjoy the lunch.
Great.
And this one woman stands up and she's the leader of the group. And she says, with a card in her hand, she says, "Who do I give the card to? I hadn't even gotten to the door yet." And then literally like popcorn, you know, people started popping up. Basically, if she wants to talk to this guy, you know, other people probably do too.
Right.
So the net result is that from that moment forward, my brother, who was my partner at the time, we started helping these people invest. And one of the companies we started investing with was a well-known mutual fund company in Boston. And at a certain point, the wholesaler, who is the person who works for the mutual fund company or the asset manager who brings financial advisors to try to get them to represent this product versus that product, he called me and he said, "Who are you guys? Like, you don't show up on the radar. You're putting an awful lot of business through us. Can I come meet you?" And the net result was that became kind of the start of this journey. And 15 years later, that same asset manager became a client of our sales enablement company, Allego. So it kind of came full circle. And it started with them, with me working with them in that capacity. And then just to kind of finish the story, so I'm financial services for about 15 years. I end up getting into the sales process training business, helping, again, financial advisors. I write two books. And at a certain point, I decide to license the content from my books to a financial services company. This company says, okay, we're going to fly 100 people out here. You're going to be on stage. You're going to teach them what they need to know. And then we're going to do a certification for them. And right at this point, I had done this a number of times in person, but everyone in the room had just been given an iPad.
Right.
And I looked around the room and I thought, wouldn't it be cool if you could just record yourself on the iPad and then share it in something like Dropbox? Right. And then we could watch this video remotely, and then we could tell you either you passed or you failed. And if you failed, you know, here's what you need to do differently. So I brought this idea to them, and they said, hey, you know what? We're willing to try that. It would save all this money and all this time.
Sure.
And what happened is it was a disaster. It was a disaster because I didn't realize that at the time, an iPad had 16 gigabytes of memory. I was telling people to record a 30-minute presentation on a 16 gigabyte iPad. And oh, by the way, many of them were traveling. So they were at a Marriott hotel. So they would call me and they'd say, Mark, I'm in the Cleveland Marriott. It says it's going to take 325 hours to upload the video. So it was at that point that I called my co-founder, who had been a longtime friend and a very successful software executive who had built and sold a software company to IBM. And I explained my situation, and he said, you know, I think you're looking at this the wrong way. He said, I don't think you want to be a training company that builds an app. I think you want to be a software company that helps trainers and sales organizations.
Wow.
And I said, you know, that's a great idea, except I don't really know anything about building a software company. And he said, well, I do. And that was 10 years ago. We have, so it's just the two of us. 10 years later, we have 275 employees. We have over 750,000 people on this platform, including a fair number of mortgage bankers, I'll have you know.
Yes.
But we're in financial services. We are in medical device. We're in high technology, and we're in manufacturing.
It's amazing. That's amazing. So many users, so much goodness coming from it. We, you know, we've adopted it, and it's so integral to some of your trainings and your business and onboarding. You never mind the actual, like, talking to people, your actual teams one-on-one. There's just so much there. Well, so you kind of hit on, you know, building relationships, and in your book, you talk about creating trust. It's one of the most important elements when you're building rapport, right?
Yes.
So tell us how, you know, the financial industry, you know what we're up against right now. Tell us how we should be going about building that kind of trust in this market.
So, you know, Taylor, it's a really interesting thing because, you know, I'm now at the stage where I actually don't look that young anymore, but I really did look young for a long time.
And you still look young.
and so what's interesting is when I was, I mean, I had one guy say to me, hey, I came to do the seminar. The guy comes up, he's like, hey man, is your mom waiting for you outside? You know, and I was like 22, right? But I look very young.
Yeah.
And so one of the things I learned, and this is more than 25 years ago, but it's entirely relevant. And I did write a book called The Product Is You. Mm-hmm. And I believe that that's true in the mortgage banker world as much as it is in the financial advisor world.
Absolutely.
Because what you're selling is the trust and the relationship and the competence. We call it character, competence, and common ground. Those are the three C's.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I did was I realized that people made a first impression of me because I was young. I had my suit on and my tie, but they had a first impression. So I decided to create what was back then called a personal biography.
Mm-hmm.
It was a black and white picture, my name, my title, where I went to school, and just a little bit of narrative, right? Which is what you would today call a LinkedIn profile. I got to tell you something, Taylor, it changed everything. We would pass these out before the seminar would begin. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm in the back of the room, or my assistant was there, and, you know, you could see people reading. Oh, look at, oh, he went, hey, I wonder if he knows. Like, you could see that people sort of connecting. And mm-hmm. then it wasn't just that. I always insisted I had to get introduced by a person of authority and influence. Mm-hmm. So in the case of the hospital I was telling you about, after that experience, the woman who became one of my clients, whenever I would do additional programs, she would come down to the lunch area when there was a seminar going on. Mm-hmm. She would do the introduction. I would give her what, you know, I wanted her to say.
Right.
But she would be able to say to people, okay, everybody settle down. I've got my friend Mark here. He's about to get started. Let me tell you a little bit about him before I started.
Right.
So if you extrapolate that kind of pre-digital world to the world we're in, it turns out not that much has changed. So number one, most of your mortgage bankers are on LinkedIn. That's good. The ones who aren't, I don't know what to tell you, but I'm going to tell you this. If you're not on LinkedIn, then it's a disadvantage to you. Mm-hmm. Unless you're in the witness protection program, people are going to Google you. And the first thing they think that comes up for most people is LinkedIn. That's number one. Number two, Taylor, here's the thing. It's not enough to just be on LinkedIn with your name and your title. The purpose of the profile is to communicate your character, your competence, and your common ground. And the way I liken it when I'm explaining this to salespeople is this becomes the first impression. Most people are going to see this before they actually meet you.
Right.
And so if you've taken, you know, a selfie at a bar, you know, on a crazy angle or something, and I've seen this. I've seen financial advisors and the guy's like, yeah, that was a picture of me and my girlfriend. I'm like, dude, no, you can't use that picture. Like, it's got to be a picture that represents the, you know, the right first impression. Right. He's like, you know, I never thought about that. Yeah. So the picture matters, the narrative matters. And of course, in many of our clients have to have a compliance review.
Mm-hmm.
But Taylor, you're a perfect example that you get this and you understand that in my world, one of the other little hacks I will tell you is that almost always I will send you, if you and I have a call like this, I'll send you a LinkedIn invitation with a very mm-hmm. short message. Taylor, in advance of our conversation next week, I'd like to add you to my LinkedIn network, Mark. So I personalize the message.
Mm-hmm.
Literally, I would tell you 99% of the invitations I send like that, 99% are mm-hmm. person response. And then I know that they saw that before I get on the phone. And then here's the real head fake of the whole thing, Taylor. When I do that, I can now make it all about you because I've already said what I need to say. Right. I've set the stage and now truly all the attention, my attention is on you because I'm not busy trying to do what salespeople so often do and holding up. Did I tell you about our company and we're the 10th largest one and we did like right. all of that pitch, right?
Yeah.
It's starting right off with what's important to you. Mm-hmm. And then people can feel that. And then there's this sense of, I feel like this person actually cares. And the truth is, in my case, I do because I'm genuinely curious about the people I'm communicating with.
Right. So, I mean, it's so true. It is like, it's like a, I always say it's like a menu for a new restaurant that comes into town and you've never heard of them. You don't even know what kind of food they serve. You're going to go and you're going to look them up and you hope that they're there, right? So that you can ultimately decide, you're probably going to decide what you're going to wear based off that menu, where you might sit from the pictures and yep. even what you're going to order.
Yeah. Well, Taylor, it's so funny you say that because my wife does that. You may do this
guilty.
As well. She's thinking about, she'll look at the menu. She knows what she's going to have to eat. And she usually makes a better choice than I do because she's doing that. But think about this. Hey, we heard about a new place. Yeah. Okay, great. We Google it. They don't have a website, just a mm-hmm. phone number. It's like, what?
Yeah.
Now in your case, just as an example, the fact that you have a professional, I think it's a professional photograph on your LinkedIn. And mm-hmm. then you have this picture with your family. Before I've even read the words, you've sent a message to me about some of the things that are most important in your life.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
What caused you to do that?
Gosh, I want to showcase who I am. I think if you're going to look at my profile, one, I think it's important for that professional picture to be there so that, you know, it's LinkedIn after all, you gotta play the game. And then two, that is it's true. My family is my number one. And so displaying that one, I'm a mom, you might alter how you message or talk to me because you see that family is so important to me.
Well, here's what's so interesting that I'd like to share with your listeners. You know, when we first met, like this is the power of character, competence, common ground, right? So I'm just going to, if I can use you as the proxy, Taylor, the first thing, because other people are going to look at your LinkedIn, right?
Right.
So first of all, you have a professional picture of you. That's number one. And it's actually the message, the way that you're doing it. Like there are certain people who have a picture of themselves like in a tuxedo or something, and that's trying to send one message.
Right.
But from what I can see from your picture, it's like Virginia Beach in the background, and it's kind of an engaging, friendly image, right?
Right.
Then you've got the issue with your family. So we have character, competence, and common ground. Then I look a little bit about your competence, and I look about your background as a digital media specialist. I can see all the, you know, a lot of the different things that you've done. And then we get to common ground. And what I told you when we're on the phone, my mother went to what was then called Radford College, and she graduated from Radford College, which is now, of course, Radford University, where you went. This is how it happens, right? This is how it happens, right? And so all of a sudden, it's like, okay, I know her. We have something in common, right? And she's competent. So you check those three boxes, and you think about this from a standpoint of a mortgage banker. There are very few times in the interest rate cycle where any one mortgage banker has, let's call it, 100 basis point difference, right? Like, it's not like I'm charging, to use current rates, I'm at 7% and you're at 8%, right? Or I'm at 7% and you're at 6%. Like, the variance isn't that big most of the time. So if that's the case, you get down to this commoditized product, in many cases offered by Fannie Mae. Then the question is, well, what are the other things on which I make the decision, right? The relationship, the responsiveness, the use of technology to make my life easier. Can I text you? We want to go back and forth on this transaction that we're working on, but I don't want to do 50 phone calls, right? So all of a sudden, those are the things that make it easy in my mind to say, you know what? I talked to two or three people, but Taylor just has something. And in the final analysis, Taylor, you know this, most of us make an emotional decision to buy, and then we justify the decision with logic. And all I'm telling you with everything I've just shared thus far is I'm giving you the logic to support the decision that you want to make anyway.
Huge. I love that. That was amazing. Well, I want to go back to virtual selling just a bit, because I've read through the majority of it, and I think it's just a powerful, powerful book. But I want to point out that you've named it in a way that you bring music to it. Okay. So being the master or the maestro or what have you.
Yes.
So I just want to say, I want to know why did you go that route? How did you tie that in and bring it home for me with that?
You got it. So here's the story. The book's called Mastering Virtual Selling, Orchestrating Sales Success. And the title, the cover of the book, if you look at it on Amazon, is a guy like a maestro in front of three different computer screens, just like a maestro who would be conducting an orchestra.
Right.
Now, the world's leading consultancy firm, the strategic consulting firm McKinsey, they have said over and over again that a seller's ability to orchestrate the sales process is the most important skill in what they call omni-channel communication. Mm-hmm. And that means that ability to go from the telephone to text to Slack to a video, to this ability to move across those different channels. And they call it orchestration.
Right.
So in your world, for example, Taylor, it could be you and I are working together, and at a certain point, there's an issue where we need to have a conversation with an underwriter, right? Mm-hmm. Your ability to not only get the underwriter to join us on a call like this, or maybe get the underwriter to record a short message and say, we're having trouble understanding what this dynamic was with your bank account. Can you provide more clarity so that we can get to a better decision, right?
Right.
That ability is something that's very different than just, quote, closing the sale.
Mm-hmm.
And so what happened for me in the origin of the book is very simple. Many years ago, I saw this TED Talk it's one of the top 10 TED Talks. And the content creator, his name is Benjamin Zander. Ben Zander TED Talk. If you Google that, it'll come up. It's an unbelievable TED Talk. And basically, you've got Ben Zander at the time, almost 80 years old. And he's playing the piano, and what he does with this audience is like nothing I've ever seen. So it turns out he's from Boston. I didn't know that at the time, but I Google him, and up comes a number. And to make a long story short, Taylor, what happens is I dial this number and he's from England and the phone is answered and I hear, hello. And I said to him, Maestro. Yeah. And he said, yes. And so I said to him, look, I saw your TED talk. There's a concert that you're giving here in Boston. I really want to come see it, but it's completely sold out. Is there anything you can do? And he thinks for a minute. He says, the concert is completely sold out. I don't have access to any additional tickets. And I'm thinking, okay, well, I tried. And he says, but I have a private corporate event that I'm doing tomorrow night. If you, and at the time, my brother, who was the one who told me about it, he said, if you and your brother would like to join me as my guests, you're welcome to. So this is out of the clear blue, kind of kindness of strangers, Taylor. So anyway, we go to the concert. And what happened at the concert was I saw Benjamin Zander before the concert interacting with the musicians. Mm-hmm. And then I saw him go out on stage. We call it front stage. And he's interacting with the audience, just blowing people away. Then he comes backstage and he continues to interact with the musicians and he's taking selfies and pictures with people and stuff. Wow. And then fast forward 10 years, we're writing this book, Mastering Virtual Selling, and we're talking about the concepts and we're looking for an operating metaphor. And I realized, wait a minute, we want to talk about orchestration. This idea of front stage, backstage very much relates to front stage is everything you do when you're synchronous, like you and I are right now, mm-hmm. versus everything that's asynchronous, like a text or an email message, or even someone listening to this podcast. It's asynchronous because they're listening to it after the fact.
Right.
So we used Benjamin Zander's story and we used the framework of what he does as an orchestra conductor and a maestro, which, by the way, the word maestro means teacher in Italian. Mm-hmm. Or professor. And then if you can believe this, 10 years later, Benjamin Zander came to the Allego customer conference in May of this past year to a sellout crowd of 350 people. And I got to introduce him. And I said to the audience, Taylor, I said, you have to understand it was the kindness of strangers that this man who didn't know me at all invited me to a private corporate event. And right. 10 years later, I'm inviting him as the featured keynote speaker to our event.
Wow. Wow. Full circle. That's wild. I love that. That's a wonderful story. I love it. All right. So this will be my last question. And then I'll ask you how you're lending forward. But you talk in your book about creating a presence in your absence. How should we go about doing that? Because I think that that is important because we're going for customers for life, right? We want your loan. We want your cousin's loan. We want to make sure that we're full trust all the time in interacting and staying in touch with people. But there is that lull. And for the last couple of years, we haven't been doing certain things. So what can we be doing to create presence in absence?
Well, I'm so glad you asked. This is a topic near and dear to my heart. I'm going to give you a couple right off the bat, but there's more where this came from. So I'm going to just tell you about some great real estate agents, some great mortgage bankers who I work with. Here's an example. The notion of presence in your absence, LinkedIn is one example. But if you don't ever post anything on LinkedIn, then I have no reason to go look at your LinkedIn.
Right.
And at the lowest level, you know, some kind of, I'll call it postcard style marketing mm-hmm. campaign can help keep some level of awareness about you. But let me give you, I think, a much better example. So I'm going to provoke some of your listeners right now. You have people like me who purchased a home and you had a mortgage within the last year. The deal closes. Tell me how simple this is. The particular town I live in Florida is near the beach. The real estate agent sends me a document, beautiful four-color document. It's about 24 pages. And it's everything you want to know about the town you live in. Mm-hmm. Where are the best public beaches? What is the form of government? Like it's the whole thing, right? It didn't cost him anything, but I didn't know this thing existed. That's number one. And oh, by the way, his name is on the back of it. Fast forward 2 months later, now that you're settled in your house, I'm sending you a list of the top 25 restaurants within 20 miles of where you are. And it's a curated list of the very best restaurants. We have that list. We've made a little game of it, my wife and I, where we've sort of put a check mark next to the ones we've been to.
Right.
So what I'm telling you is we keep thinking about this person because of these thoughtful things they've done. And here's the remarkable part. It was the thoughtfulness, not the cost. They didn't need to spend $100 and get us flowers, or they didn't need to do any of that. Right. It was having a system in place to be able to stay top of mind and by providing something of value. Right. So what I would tell you is in my experience, and in particular, the mortgage banker that I'm thinking of, even four times a year, four communications a year during the year, I'm not buying anything, is enough to keep him top of mind for when that time comes.
Right.
And I think in this case, the person I'm thinking of, I told you about a real estate person because that's most top of mind. But my mortgage banker has done an excellent job on this exact topic. And he sent an article to me on 1031 exchanges. Like he's just doing enough that why would I not call him first when it's that time? So what I'm going to tell you is at a certain point, this is about, are you committed to the business for the long term? And if you're a believer in the lifetime value of a customer, then you set the system up once and it becomes fairly straightforward to say, everyone who's in my orbit is going to be receiving something ideally thoughtful and relevant to remind them of what we've already done and the chance to work together again.
Yes, that was very well said. It's so true. It's the littlest things sometimes are the most meaningful, you know, and even if it's just four times a year, as you said, it's really not that hard to continue to be consistent with it. So I thank you for that. And all
hey,
right,
by the way, question. can I just throw something in? So what you may know is in, you know, I'm a big believer that there are no coincidences. And it's also been said that coincidences are God's way of remaining anonymous. Mm. So I'm in my office in this little executive office suite. And it's, what's weird is there's maybe 10 offices in the suite, but you almost never see the other people. Like they go in and close the door and they come out, but you just, there's not that much interaction. So it turns out that I'm locking my door, kind of coming out. And I literally bump into a guy next to me. And I said, hey, how you doing? Like a suite mate, you know? So he's like, are you with a Lego? I said, yeah, I am. I am with a Lego. And I said, who are you with? And he's like, I'm with the Atlantic Bay Mortgage. I said, no kidding. How did you know? Because my name is not even on my door. He's like, how'd you know? He said, I saw it downstairs on the thing. He said, you know, we're customers of yours. I'm like, yeah, I know that. Long story short, after John Wines and I met like that, literally, I can tell you, Taylor, the same document that I just told you about that this top agent sent to me, what did I do? Because John is also interested in the same town, I forwarded it to him. I said, you need to see this thing, right?
Right.
So that's just a perfect example of the mindset of saying, when I have things of value, I want to share them with the people who are part of my circle.
Yeah, it's so true. And I love that piece about the coincidence. They're just, how crazy is that? That you guys just literally bumped into
each other. Yes.
So
and the best part is we could have been there for 10 years and literally never met.
I know. Right? I know. Yeah. It's wild. It is wild. Well, all right. Tell us how you're going to lend forward. You can answer that however you'd like, actually. I was going to say next year, but please, the floor is yours, is to open up.
Well, tell me a little bit more context when people are answering that generally, what are they normally, what's the context?
Gosh, it's like a what's next for you question. So whether, and you can take that. I always like to tee it up in such a way that it's like, I don't want to direct you in a certain way.
Yeah. Okay. That's perfect. Well, I'll tell you how I'm going to lean forward very, very simply. In our world, what we've realized is there is a convergence happening between what's called the learning that salespeople need to go through to get ready to be their best and the content that they need access to. And in the past, Taylor, what happened is you had some kind of a learning system or sales enablement platform that was designed to help you, as I said, get ready to sell. That's to help you get onboarded, help you get up to speed on new products, to get certified, to learn from your peers, all that stuff kind of internal. And then there was some other system over here that was designed to say, well, you're going to communicate with your customers this way and you're going to help do prospecting, you know, and they were two different swim lanes, if you will. Mm-hmm. What's happened now is there's a convergence And the convergence is that people are realizing that a lot of the content that's actually really useful for you as a salesperson or mortgage banker, as you're going through that process to learn about something, some of that same content is actually potentially useful for your prospect who wants to learn about it. Not all of it. I mean, there's a level of detail that you as an expert or professional, you're probably going to get into. But, you know, for example, you might have an economist that's talking about what does interest rates at 7% mean to home buyers as it relates to influencing their decision. Mm-hmm. That might be a piece of content you listen to. And then you think, you know what? Taylor was just telling me that she had a question about this whole interest rate piece. Let me forward that piece of content, of course, if it's approved, to be able to do that. And so the big leap forward for us is this convergence with our customers of helping them combine all of the elements of sales enablement that include both learning and content.
Ah, I can't wait to see it. I really can't. You know, I am 100% all about the tech side, automations, and video. Video is so key right now. If you're not reaching out to your past customers, your current in the pipeline clients, and then your agents via video, at least weekly to remain in front of certain people. I know you're probably, that's a little cringeworthy for your past customers. Four times a year, people. That's all we need.
Yeah, but exactly. Times a year.
Yeah, communicating through a text video has so much more impact than just an email or a quick little text. You know, I think it's so important. But
I want to finish that thought with what you, if people go back to your LinkedIn, that was the word I was looking for earlier. And what you just said kind of brings it all together. What you put on your LinkedIn is authentic for who you are. Mm-hmm. There's not a huge gap between my conversation with you and what I expected it to be based on my first impression.
Right.
Right. And so what's so cool about what you just said with respect to video, and we're definitely seeing this across industries now, is salespeople are recognizing that people want to connect with the authentic human that you are. Mm-hmm. And what we've brought to the table is to say, YouTube has already proven you don't need makeup, beautiful lights. You don't need everything to be great. You need to be facing a light source, right? Have a relatively steady camera or some kind of a selfie stick, and then be able to just make it short form and compelling. And think about yourself. Who isn't interested in clicking a 15 or 30 second video versus reading another 10 text emails?
I know. It's so important. And being able to show up like that and you can be vulnerable. It's hard and it's because of the fear of rejection. But if you get out of that mindset and you're just raring to go and you say, hey, 2023 is going to be the year of video for me. I'm going to create a library that makes my life streamlined and I'm going to be able to send videos to all my prospects and my whoever the heck it is, somebody who's sitting on the sidelines thinking 7% is too much. I'm going to forward you something that might be impactful. So it's creating value. So I appreciate you so much. This was so fun. I can't wait to do this again, maybe in 6 months where we can talk about the launch of what are those two different lines and how they converge together. I can't wait to hear all about it, but thank you so much, Mark.
Taylor, it's a pleasure. And let me leave you with one thing. I bought my first house in 1995. My interest rate was 7.5%. And at that time, interest rates had been above 8% for quite a while. And so we were so psyched to get 7.5%.
Right.
And so what's so interesting, and this is where that expertise and that competence comes back, helping to frame for people the actual interest rate cycle and recognizing that this thing that we had at 3% and 4% was actually a historic anomaly for a long period of time. Right. And it may be quite a long time before, if ever, that happens again. That's the kind of value that I brought when I started this story about the financial services business. And that's the kind of value that I believe the best mortgage bankers need to lean in and be able to communicate that. Because otherwise, people don't understand. They're thinking, well, I'm going to wait. You could be waiting 30 years. By enjoy which time you would have already paid the mortgage off.
Enjoy that rental property. Yeah, crazy. I know.
So thank you.
Thank you. And this is awesome. We appreciate you coming on.
Thanks again for listening to the Lending Forward podcast powered by Atlantic Bay Mortgage Group. Don't forget to tune in next week and make sure you subscribe to our channel. Remember, we all play a part in lending forward. So go lend something forward today.